Welcome to another episode of Thinking Like a Bank, where we show you how to think like a bank by applying the same strategies and principles that banks use to help you find more financial freedom in your life. I'm your host, Sarah Ibrahim.
Have you heard of premium financing? If you've been researching the bank on yourself concept, as well as cash value whole life insurance, then you may have recently learned about premium financing. It's a complex subject that requires careful consideration and research. Check out this episode with certified financial planner Mark Willis of Lake Growth Financial Services to learn more about premium financing and how it works. Hey, Mark, welcome back to our podcast.
Hey, Sarah, glad to be here.
Yeah, it's nice to talk to you again. For those who don't know, we've done a couple other episodes in the past. We've talked about, you know, what is a bank on yourself professional? What is Index Universal Life? And other parts of the bank on yourself concept and using cash value whole life insurance. For today, Mark, I wanted to kind of get your opinion on premium financing. I've had a couple clients reach out to me about that question. I've been seeing some posts on LinkedIn, and it's just been coming up on my newsfeed, the subject of premium financing. So if you don't mind, you want to start with that. What is premium financing?
Okay. Yeah. I mean, it's a complex strategy. It can offer some benefits. It also comes with some significant risks, just like everything else in the financial universe. And you really want to make sure you've done your due diligence and you're working with a competent professional who can help you manage something like this if you're going to go down this path. It is always mind-boggling to me the ongoing newer, sexier ways to get to lure people into buying life insurance. Mm-hmm. And agents and marketing organizations are always thinking of, like, I think, nifty ways to help you to want to really jump into this weird asset class of life insurance as a savings and wealth protection vehicle. So I really think it's sort of like this, that in principle, what it is you're wanting to buy major amounts of life insurance, but you don't want to come up with the cash flow to pay for it. So, you know, you might want to buy a $30 million death benefit or larger. And you may or may not want to come up with the 900 grand a year that might cost you to pay for that. So the options are don't get it or get term insurance that expires on you and it's a waste of money.
Yeah.
Or do premium financing. So why don't I pass the ball back to you? What are the steps for someone who wants to do premium financing if they've decided they want to do that? What are the actual logistical steps?
Well, yeah, in this example, if they want to do a $30 million death benefit, like you mentioned, the premiums would probably be around $900,000 a year. It'll probably be outlaid for 10 years. So 10 years of putting in $900,000 a year. And then to your point, you have a couple options. You could do all cash, $900,000 a year cash, which most people do in the life insurance world. And then there's the other option of premium financing. You go to a bank, a third party lender. You take out a loan for $900,000 a year, or $9 million in this case, 900,000 times 10. Every year, the bank pays or the lender pays 900,000, but you, the client, only pay the interest on that, right? For 10 years in a row. And it's a variable interest rate. And I think it's, correct me if I'm wrong, but it's on an annual basis. So you pay the annual interest, let's just say to make it easy, 10% interest. So if it's 9 million, you pay the interest on that 10% a year due every year. And then when you get to year 10, let's just say your cash value is reached, like, you know, if it's 900,000 times 10, that's 9 million. So let's just say it's 10 million now, your cash value. You take out a loan, usually a max loan, to pay off the bank. So you pay the last payment, which is principal only. And then now you own this life insurance policy, I guess, free and clear now. It's yours now. You paid off the loan.
You've paid off the bank's loan.
Yeah, exactly.
Now there's not much. Well, what is the cash value left in the policy? That's the question. And maybe there's some left in there. Hopefully there is. And the key question is, well, all right, now I have a policy loan on my policy worth $9 million. What is the survival rate of that life insurance policy with the $9 million loan against it? And in other words, what is the lapse rate of premium financed policies once that bank loan is paid off? After all the dust settles, after the agent has been paid a significant sum of commissions, okay? Because I've, believe me, I really want premium financing to work. for clients, but also because those are some major commissions to the insurance agent. And let's just be candid about that. But, you know, I can't look past the risks here. And you're already sort of spelling those out. We've borrowed from our policy, or we had to sell some real estate or something else to pay off the bank. Mm-hmm. And now we have a big loan against our policy that we now have to either service for the rest of our lives, paying interest on that $9 million policy loan.
Yeah.
Or we just watch the loan accumulate and get larger and possibly gobble up the entire life insurance policy, and we lose the life insurance coverage. And the only person who really walks away is the agent with commissions. Mm-hmm. And of course, the banker gets all the interest that you were paying her or him over the many years that you had this operation going. And of course, the insurance company gets to not have to pay out your family if that policy lapses. So they win too. The only person who hasn't won in that scenario was the person with all the risk, the policy owner.
Got it. And I think this kind of goes against, in a way, the bank on yourself concept, right? Like you're becoming your own banker, you're recouping interest you would otherwise pay to other lenders. So I guess this kind of, in a way, defeats that because you are paying interest, there is risk. But you mentioned something interesting. If for example, if I was a client in the situation, not only would the policy itself be the collateral for the lender who I'm getting the premiums financed through, but also other collateral I have in my portfolio, right? Like if I own real estate, I have to get usually second lien positions. If I have other assets, I usually have to put that into the mix, especially if the bank is gonna pay $9 million over 10 years in this example. Do you mind explaining more about how does the collateral work in a premium finance policy?
Well, yeah, the collateral on this typically is the life insurance cash value itself. Is that what you're asking?
Yeah, exactly. And in addition to that, in addition to the policy.
Oh, okay. Yeah. There's typically other collateralized assets that are required. Typically, that way, if the policy itself or the investments underperform, the policyholder may need to come up with a bunch of additional collateral to risk to avoid the policy lapsing or them coming to collect, you know, repoing the policy or repoing the real estate. You know, you need additional collateral typically to make that premium financing operation work. You're exactly right. So we're back into the banker's pocket then, aren't we?
Right, exactly. And then now the listeners might be listening and wondering, well, how can the policy not perform as projected if we are talking about whole life policy, dividend paying whole life insurance, and the guarantees behind it and the high likelihood of dividends? But we're not talking about whole life insurance, right? Typically with premium finance cases, we're talking about index universal life.
Correct. Yeah, that's correct. And generally speaking, premium financing does use index universal life insurance. And under great circumstances, it might just work as advertised.
Yeah.
Again, even if it works as advertised, I'd like to compare a giant premium financing case with simply another alternative, which you and I can talk about here in a little while, and just see which one of those two beats the other. We can talk about what the alternative would be to premium financing if you'd like in a minute. But you're exactly right. Under best case scenarios, when we run our assumptions, the IUL, the Index Universal Life contract, is typically what's used with premium financing these days. That's that was not the case 30 years ago. But as IUL has picked up popularity, it's been the go-to product for premium financing in the last 2-3 decades. So we have not gone a whole lifetime with premium financing using IUL. It's just not old enough yet. Since IUL is so young, we literally haven't gone through the full life experiment with premium financing in IUL yet. But what many agents would like to say is, hey, look, looky here at this illustration. On this illustration here, it says you'll have X dollars. That'll be more than enough to pay off your big bank loan in 10 years. And usually the policy holder or the applicant for the life insurance says, okay, where do I sign? And they sign up. And of course, then things can change, can't they? What are some of the ways that insurance companies can change the game on you when you have an IUL product?
So I know with IUL, the first letter index, that's it stands for index. So the index allocations can change, the market can change. So yeah, there's a 0% floor, but what if you are getting, what if that happens? You get a 0% floor in 1 year, but then there's annual renewable term in the policy as well. That means that the cost of insurance keeps climbing. Even if you have a 0% floor on the market side, you could have a loss on the annual renewable term side. So in other words, the cost of insurance keeps increasing. That's a big risk right there. And then let's just fast forward. Let's just say you were successful through the 10-year part. It goes through, everything goes through. You take out that loan, you pay off the bank. Now you have a loan with the life insurance company. Well, that life insurance company loan is increasing, right? Every day it's accumulating. The loan balance on that is accumulating. And again, what if you have 0% gain or loss in 1 year? You have kind of two parts now. One is the cost of insurance keeps growing, and then the second part is the interest every day keeps growing. So you could essentially, like you said, your policy can lapse in coverage with the index universal life policy, especially one with a massive loan against it, like in this example here.
And I'd like to add to that, you've brought up some great points. And generally speaking, what happens to the markets when interest rates are falling?
Mm-hmm.
Well, typically cheap money means we can pump more into assets like stocks, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So when interest rates are falling, stocks are going up. That means our indexed universal life insurance is going to look pretty.
Yes.
When interest rates are falling. Well, as we're recording this, just yesterday, the Fed raised rates again, didn't they? So what happens to markets, stock markets, real estate, if interest rates go sky high? Two things are going wrong here for our poor premium financing folks. One, the index is probably going to be down or negative. It was last year in 2022. And it's up this year so far, but we shall see if they keep raising rates. Second, the next problem is the bank's loan is variable after a certain period of time. So the bank's loan becomes a problem for us in a rising interest rate environment. Means the borrower is going to have to pay more interest on that bank loan than originally assumed. And that could dramatically alter the benefits of premium financing at the same time. At the same time as your indexed universal life policy is getting flats or zeros or even negatives, according to the cost of insurance increasing. So we've got a lot of unknowns. And I think, to be candid with you, I think it goes against our principles of unnecessary risks. Taking too many unnecessary risks can cause some trouble. So I go back to, why did we do this?
Mm-hmm.
The original purpose of premium financing was not to pay the insurance agent a bunch of money or to make the banker wealthy. Typically, premium financing purpose was originally for transfer tax purposes, estate planning. It's for estate planning. Would you mind talking about like maybe the original design of premium financing?
Yeah, absolutely. From an estate planning perspective, I definitely see it from that way. Let's say you had, $30 million in real estate. If you pass away, that's going to be a big estate problem for your family because real estate is considered an illiquid investment. So they'd have to sell that real estate to pay off estate taxes and gift taxes and death taxes. And it could be problematic, and usually people don't like to sell real estate under pressure, whether it's a high market or a low real estate market. It's problematic to sell real estate under that kind of pressure. So you would get a lot of life insurance to cover the estate tax. I know that, I think the limit as of this year is what, close to $13 million for estate taxes. So any assets above that amount are going to be exposed to estate taxes. So life insurance is typically arguably the best way to pay for estate taxes and estate expenses in general is through life insurance. So I could see it from that perspective where you have the death benefit there, you finance the premiums on the life insurance policy. So if something were to happen to you, your family wouldn't have to sell closely held stocks and businesses or land or real estate, other illiquid investments. They could use the life insurance for that. And in this example, as we mentioned earlier, $900,000 could yield a $30 million death benefit. So if you paid just 10% interest on that, the client might be able to justify that. Well, I'll pay, $70,000 or $80,000 in interest this year for potentially $30 million in death benefit. I see it from that perspective, probably only that perspective, just from the estate planning and death benefit side.
You know, you're exactly right. There's a real purpose why premium financing exists. It does matter when why we're doing what we're doing with our money. So I always say there are far more people willing to sell premium financing out there than there are people willing to buy or eligible to buy.
Yes.
Premium financing. So that's just something to be aware of. I would say too, the other big problem with, again, using an IUL contract is, not to go back to that for a minute, but they are not going to give us growth when we borrow against the policy, are they? So as we are borrowing money out of that IUL to pay off the bank loan, that breaks all the compound growth. Now, one alternative would be to use whole life insurance from a non-direct recognition contract. Mm-hmm. So even though IUL is kind of your go-to with premium financing, I'd like to see how a non-direct recognition policy loan, the kind that you talk about on your podcast through and we discuss about on ours with Bank on Yourself designed policies that are non-direct recognition for a few reasons. One, non-direct recognition loans will continue to compound and grow as if you did not borrow the money out. Mm-hmm. This has the net effect of allowing your policy a real fighting chance after you've paid the banker off. So you've got the opportunity then to compound your wealth on, what'd we say, $9 million or whatever after 10 years?
Exactly. Yes.
So that's a real powerhouse right there. If you have a future windfall, let's say that you do this premium financing thing because you know you're going to get a $20 million inheritance 20 years from now. Let's just say that you're that lucky. So then you could do premium financing, pay off the loan with the bank, with the policy loan. So you pay off the bank loan with the policy loan, and then you service that policy loan for the next 5-10 years until Aunt Mildred passes away and leaves you $20 million. All the while, your policy has been earning interest and dividends. If it's whole life, if it's non-direct recognition, it's been earning interest and dividends on the entire cash value, even the $9 million that you pulled out to pay off the old greedy banker.
Yeah,
you know, at year 10. So any feedback or thoughts on using that as a scenario for premium financing?
Yeah, and you have the ability now, because when you took off that loan to pay off the bank and you service the interest every year, when you do get that inheritance, now you have a place to park that money. And I think that a whole life policy that's properly structured, that's non-direct recognition, that's in its later years with a $9 million outstanding loan in this example, it's arguably the best place on earth to put that money into it, because it's going to keep earning dividends and interest again forever, uninterrupted. So I think that, and then there will probably room to, you know, inflate the cash value that way, because you've paid off the loan now. Now, 10, 15 years from now, you could circle back and then borrow that money again. And this brings in an interesting point too, because I mentioned this to a few clients recently that asked me about index universal life, and a couple asked me about variable universal life as well. And I say to them that why take that additional risk, right? Because even if the variable universal life or the index universal life plays out good for 1 year or 2 years, you still have the ongoing risk. Rather, my opinion, put your money into a non-direct recognition whole life policy, the bank on yourself way, and then borrow against the policy, and then use the money that you borrow to take risks with that money. Invest in real estate, invest in closely held businesses, buy stocks, do whatever you want with that money, but have the policy as your foundation. I wouldn't necessarily take risks with your life insurance. Your life insurance should be the safest asset in your portfolio. It should be as safe as your checking account or your CD or your money market mutual fund. It shouldn't be any riskier than that. Index universal life and variable universal life are definitely far riskier than your CD or your money market mutual fund or your checking account at a local bank.
So true. So true. So I want to talk about too, maybe another way to think about this. So if the game and the plan and the purpose of premium financing, if it was meant to be cash accumulation, I would say that there's probably a more efficient way to do this. I'd say premium financing is oftentimes mainly focused to help you get a permanent death benefit. I wouldn't say it's not really there primarily for folks to accumulate cash value. Mm-hmm. It's there for estate planning purposes. I think we've talked some about that. So what if instead, you know, the typical arrangement with premium financing, Sari, is, as you know, is you get a loan from the bank to pay your premium for you. And then your job out of pocket is to pay the interest payments on the loan that you took from that bank. So what I'd like to do is say, all right, well, let's just take the interest payments we were going to send that bank and put it into our policy as premium, a smaller policy as mm-hmm. instead. Let's say we were going to pay $63,000 a year in bank interest. Okay. And would that be better than paying 63 grand in bank interest to the bank? Would it be better to put 63 grand a year into our policy and just see how that grows and accumulates over time?
Mm-hmm.
Right. So of course people would say, well, Mark, if you're putting, let's just say 300 grand into a policy every year, you're mm-hmm. going to have a lot more cash value. And I'd say, yes, you will. But the banker is going to want a big piece of that 10 years from now, let's say, when the bank loan is due. So far, is that making sense?
Yes, sir. Mm-hmm. Yes.
All right. So once the bank loan is satisfied, what is the net cash value in the 10th year? Is it less or more than your cash value would be in the 10th year if you were just simply putting in 63 grand a year into a whole life policy and just firing the banker from the whole scenario? Sure, the interest, the insurance agent won't get paid as much. You know, he or she won't get commissions on 300 grand. He or she will get commissions on 63 grand.
Yeah.
But the point is cash accumulation.
Yes.
Without any unnecessary risk. Now, before I go any further, any additional thoughts or comments or insights on that scenario? Alternative to premium financing?
Yeah, I definitely see it from that perspective. Like, let's run the numbers both ways. Let's see the premium financing situation, and let's see just using the traditional method of funding a whole life policy. You know, we don't have to go necessarily the sexy way, but just the traditional way, the kind of the boring way, if you will.
Right.
Yeah, it makes sense.
The best notes I could find with where interest rates are with premium financing says that after 10 years of doing that scenario that I just laid out,
yeah.
you'd have about $610,000 of cash value left at the end of 10 years.
Okay.
So 610,000 is the number to beat. Now I'm looking at what a cash value would look like on a policy designed with bank on yourself, designed whole life insurance.
More than 610 for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. if you're funding it with the 63 grand, you were going to have to give that banker anyway. My cash value here notes on a 45-year-old that you'd have about $701,000 of cash value and a $2.3 million death benefit. So which is more? Which would you rather have, $610,000 and a bunch of bankers up your backside? Or would you rather have $701,000 of cash value and you're your own banker? Which one makes more sense to you?
Right, exactly. The 701, not only that, but like you said, there's no strings attached. There's no second lien positions on your real estate. There's no credit checks, credit, you know, monitoring. It falls within the bank on yourself strategy.
Yeah.
Plus the 610, the previous example, comparing it to the premium finance situation, that's probably if everything goes well, if the market goes well, interest rates go well, the banks, the lenders, everything goes well, you come out ahead at 610. But what if one of those things doesn't work out? Interest rates go too high. Either the market doesn't look good for a couple of years in a row on the index side. So I think it's such a powerful question. Like, do you really want to take unnecessary risks?
Yeah. Yeah. I think we've put this to bed. There's plenty more to mm-hmm. this strategy. And obviously everyone's got a different story and a different particular detail to all this, but you also want to think about retirement income as well. Because again, if you've got a mega loan against your policy, how is that going to impact your retirement income? Ultimately, I hope that's what everyone is using their policies for. If they're doing the bank on yourself strategy, typically the exit plan is to spend down your cash value as a stream of, you know, tax advantage or even tax-free income in retirement.
Mm-hmm.
But if you've got premium financing, you've got that albatross of a bank, of a policy loan to pay off before you can really have that money free and clear again. Is that right?
Right, exactly. So if the loan keeps growing every single day, it's growing. By the time, let's just say you paid off the loan at age 45, now you're 65. So 20 years later, you'll probably be no surprise that you won't have any money on the premium financing side left for retirement income, because every day that loan was growing. And then those loans are typically, correct me if I'm wrong, they're typically variable loans. So when interest rates go up, the cost of those loans also increase too. So again, more risk, right? It's just more risk, more uncertainty. And I think that a premium financing expert actually explained it to me that I think he said he's never structured a premium financing case for retirement income. It's always been for high death benefit. And then just death benefit, even in the later, after they pay off the loan, still the objective is just death benefit for the later years.
Well, that's saying a lot right there. Yep. That you were speaking with someone who's done this, and I assume not just since yesterday, for quite a while.
Exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. This is all he does. Yeah. And he explained it to me that way.
So, you know, there's a big, there's a moral to this story, and it goes down to really the old saying that I think we're a lot of times we're taught as investors, especially real estate investors, to use OPM. What does OPM stand for? Well, other people's money, right?
Yeah.
And sometimes leverage is a beautiful thing.
Yeah.
It really is. I mean, it's an incredible, every child really needs to understand on the seesaw the power of leverage. Yeah. When I was a kid, I'd get on that seesaw and the biggest kid in the class, I loved it when he would come get on the other side because he would just slam down the seesaw and throw me in the air. As a kid, I was 6 years old, I loved that. I didn't care if he was in fifth grade, you know. But leverage is not so cool. It's not as fun when you slam down on the ground or even worse, your back gets cracked on the back of that seesaw. And the truth is, leverage can work both ways, can't it? Leverage feels good when you're the one pushing the lever. Yeah. But when you're the little six-year-old against the fifth grader on that seesaw, you can get your back cracked pretty easily. So any final thoughts on how premium financing might just throw us off the seesaw?
Yeah, I mean, the bank is essentially going to win, right? Whether if things work out or not, the bank comes out ahead because it's your collateral. You're the one paying the premiums. You're the one on the hook for it. So I think that's a really important thing to keep in mind is the bank virtually has no risk at all. Either they get the money from you or from your policy or from your other collateral.
Yeah, so at the end of the day, for me, I would prefer just to be the one in control of the entire operation so that there's fewer hands in the pot.
Yes.
And I know that my outcome is going to be assured and even guaranteed before I even begin on the journey. Mm-hmm. You know, if we get into our car and we use a GPS to go to the grocery store or even more across country to get our kid to college or something like that, much more important it is to use a GPS for our money. Yeah. And if our financial plan is subject to so many changes that other people have the levers and pulleys on, then we're just asking for it at that point. We're just asking for a black eye or a red back.
Right. Awesome, Mark. Thank you so much. I appreciate all that. I'm looking forward to having you back on. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
To learn more about what we do and how we can help you grow more wealth, please visit www.finassetprotection.com. That's F-I-N, assetprotection.com. The topics presented in this podcast are for general information only and not for the purposes of providing legal, accounting, or investment advice. On such matters, please consult a professional who knows your specific situation.